Ich liebe es, mich bei CJLO freiwillig zu engagieren, weil ich unzählige kreativen, interessanten und leidenschaftlichen Menschen kennengelernt habe. Bei so vielen Möglichkeiten, alle Aspekte des Rundfunks und der Tonproduktion kennenzulernen, ist es wirklich toll, sich mit CJLO zu beschäftigen, um sich Gehör zu verschaffen. Wenn Sie daran interessiert sind, Freiwilliger bei CJLO zu werden, senden Sie ein E-Mail an volunteer@cjlo.com oder bewerben Sie sich unter cjlo.com/volunteer.
This is Matthew Marsh for the CJLO Community Calendar for the week of Monday, October 30th to Sunday, November 5th, 2023. Concordia has embraced the Halloween spirit this year. We have a jam-packed schedule of Halloween events to get in your spooky fix. Concordia's Centre D campaign is having a Halloween bake sale in the Engineering, Computer Science, and Visual Arts Integrated Complex at 11 a.m. Afterwards, you can take the shuttle bus to the Loyola campus for the Concordia Farmers Market special Halloween market at 3 p.m. Attendees can get free apple cider as well as free gourd decorating. To cap off the night, head on down to Le Frigo Verts for a special showing of the horror comedy film, The People Under the Stairwell, at 7 p.m. Check out Concordia's website for more information on these events. If that doesn't get your Halloween fix in, then check out the Haunted Griffintown Ghost Walks. Visit some of Montreal's most haunted sites, from vacant breweries to the ruins of St. Anne's Church. Attendees may even run into the ghost of Mary Gallagher, a headless prostitute rumored to still roam the borough to this day. Ghost walks are held every Friday and Saturday, starting at 8 p.m. For more information, check out hauntedmontreal.com. For all you punk rock fans out there, I got a show that you can't miss out on. The infamous Russian feminist punk rock band, Pussy Riot, is playing at the Rialto Theater in the Mile End this Wednesday, November 1st. Doors open at 6:30 and the show starts at 8. Tickets are on sale for $35 Canadian. And that's your community calendar for this week. I'm Lucas Matthew Marsh.
I should have chauffeured. Man. Chopping it up with Brian, bought real estate by the ocean. A sea
monster
juice,
my man. How are we doing?
How are you?
Good, man. It was a great week of sports. We had our first sports equinox in a long time the other day there. I think that was Monday.
Before we start, though, you're listening to the starting rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Guinea, alongside me, Jacob Snyder. But excluding sports, how have you been, Jacob?
You know what? I can't complain. The weather starts getting colder, and the complaints usually do start. But I have a great football team. I have one of the most exciting hockey teams to watch in the entire NHL. The basketball team, we might not need to talk about them as much, but the other two are good, and I can't complain around this time. That's all I'm doing right now, man. It's sports seasons.
Yeah, midterms just are almost around the corner. However, things are getting colder. I'm bundling up. Layers are starting. It's time to really, you know, get into that winter mindset, you know, the abrasively colds, like mornings waking up, you know, getting into that cold car, starting it, waiting for that to warm up. The wind, oh, I'm not looking forward to it, but, you know, that's for a few weeks. That's for future Gab to worry about. On that note, let's start off with kind of a more heavy topic. Over the weekend, a player by the name of Adam Johnson, who is playing in Europe, formerly a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins organization, as well as the AHL affiliate, Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, unfortunately passed away in a freak accident. He unfortunately got his, I don't even want to say it, but he got his neck severed, not severed, but pretty much sliced up. of course, you hate to see it, but it's unfortunately, it's happened before in the sport of hockey, and seeing the video, I still don't understand how the skate got up that high. You've watched the video, have you?
Yes, it's one of the wildest hockey videos I think I've ever seen. I understand that players sometimes get knocked into the air, and you're on ice on skates. Of course, you're going to lose your footing and things and fall. But like you said, the position of his body in the air, it leads you to some questions. Like, what was the intent there? What was he trying to do?
Like, I don't know if of course, no one wants to think there's intent behind it, because I don't think that's the case. I just think that, you know, when you're going at a specific speed on ice, your weight shifting on one side, and the slightest bump or touch could totally destabilize you. So looking at the video, it seemed like the player had all his weight on the outside. Of course, Johnson being on the other side of that leg. And then one of Johnson's teammates kind of bumped the player. Due to all of his weight being on that one side, his leg kind of like, as a retaliatory type of thing, kind of flew up behind and kind of hit his throat. But this, I think, this totally could have been avoided if the NHL or just leagues, pro leagues in general, start implementing more stricter guidelines around neck protection.
I was going to say, is it that much of a hindrance for players to wear? Like, why would they not already have been wearing it?
So, as a player who used to play, like, at a relatively higher level, it's low-key frowned upon, to be honest. And you're kind of viewed as kind of like, I don't know what the football or baseball equivalent of that would be, but you're kind of viewed as like, it's not cool. You know, like, it's kind
of
like...
Oh, it's more of a style thing.
It's a style thing, but also some players say that, like, you know, it's not very comfortable when you're looking down, like, briefly, and you feel like that Kevlar wrapping around your neck, but it's very supple. So it's not the worst. Like, I've played with it. It's not the end of the world, but I've also played without it. But you do feel that your neck is... You have at least 2 inches where it's very exposed, and it's not very safe. We've seen the NHL, however... Well, actually, before that, we've seen multiple leagues, like the AHL, for example, and leagues below the NHL start mandating neck guards for their players. But considering Clint Malarchuk in the past, Richard Zennick in the NHL a few years ago when he was with the Florida Panthers, we've seen this before, so I don't know why now. I guess because they never perished. He didn't die from it. So I'm assuming they weren't taking it as serious.
But I was gonna
Which is horrible to say if you think about it.
You educated me on hockey history. I had thought this was the first time that this had happened, and it's just some random freak accident that we see once in a trillion hockey games. No, you told me, and I saw, that this had happened before. Like you said, why were there not more steps taken at that point? Like, that needed to happen once and never again.
Exactly. But then it did happen again. And I think the only reason why the NHL and other leagues are taking it more serious now is because a player unfortunately succumbed to his injuries. And for it to lead all the way to someone dying, for them to make change, it's a bit of a joke.
It's a bad look. We felt like we're doing the same show again this week about hockey, but a different topic. You do not want people focused on PR issues like this. Now, I feel absolutely terrible for that individual. I do not want to take away from that whatsoever. But looking at it as a whole from the league perspective, this is awful.
So eventually, I hope that just like what the NHL did, grandfathering in helmets, grandfathering in face protection like visors. You know, now you see in the league, they're probably like, I can count the players on my hand who do not have a visor. Because now players who are coming into the league have to wear visors. So hopefully, if the NHL wants to, you know, protect the players, the assets, and the money that comes around, which is what is in sport, right? I think it's for sure needed that they should be protected to a certain degree. And not only for the, of course, leagues look at it from a dollar perspective, right? But at the same time, it's life, right? It's the safety of players, and the NHLPA should be fully on board with this as well.
I mean, you hate to say this was an absolute worst-case scenario. Had it been a cut or... any other area in his body, we're probably not discussing this today. But given where it was, you can't have it happen a third time now. Like, we need to step forward here and see some change. But what I worry about is this happened in a smaller league. how long will it take the NHL to actually adopt that? Like, obviously, that smaller league, it sounds like they're going to make changes immediately and force the players to begin wearing neck protections, you know, going forward. But how long till that trickles up to the NHL? Are we going to be talking about in 3 years, okay, they finally instituted the mandatory neck protections?
It's mandated in the AHL right now.
Right.
But, yeah, you're saying that next level.
How long? How long? Yeah. How long are we going to be waiting? Is this going to happen in the NHL again? And then we're...
And the craziest part is the some major junior leagues, like the Q, for example, have had this mandate in for nearly a decade.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So then there are other junior leagues who just don't really care. They don't care, but they just haven't mandated it. So, like, for example, like the WHL hasn't mandated it. The OHL, to a degree, I don't think has mandated it. The Q has done it for nearly a decade. AHL has just mandated it in light of Adam Johnson's passing. But it should have been done, especially seeing the graphic nature of it, because it's in your jugular, right? Like, if you look at the Clint Malarchuk video, he was... and I'm grabbing my neck as I'm talking about this.
He was
millimeters away from fully being another statistic, you know? And
the thing that gets me, though, is that other leagues had instituted this. You know what I mean? Why wasn't it already adopted? Like you were talking about with the visors. Now they had brought that in, and now players are just doing it. It's part of the rules now. You're wearing a visor, no discussion. Other leagues felt like there was enough of a safety risk to institute the rule where you have to wear the neck protection. Why was it not involved in this league? Like, why are they not? Why is there such a gap between leagues in terms of like the necessary protection for standard sports uniforms? I feel like this should. We can go a bit deeper with this. Like, should it be a bit more uniform across leagues?
I think it's only like. Human nature falls into it too until something really bad happens. That's when change is implemented. And you can look down. Like if you look at hockey like 50 years ago, no, there was barely any protection. Like helmets weren't a thing yet. The protection itself was very mobile, flexible, not really much protection at all near the sternum, the shoulders. So players, you know, weren't really the best protected. And of course, when injury comes along and they see the stats, CTE going up, the fighting, all that stuff, they adjust. And now with this unfortunate passing, despite there being previous players getting slashed in that area, like again, the Richard Zenick one was also very scary as well. And in particular, Clint Malarchuk was the most graphic. But with that being said, I think it's time for them now to like, you know, I'm not going to blame it on them that they haven't done anything yet. But it's unfortunate that it took them a death within the sport to finally like move into that direction. That's what's really whack.
That's the frustrating part. I mean, someone at 27 passed away. Like, that's terrible. You never want to see that, especially in a sports arena. Like, we understand, and these athletes understand, when they go out there's a risk of injury, but you're expected to go home at the end of the day. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Is there anything similar in, like, the NFL that they've done?
Well, yeah, you talked about concussions. That's kind of what brought it on. So before, they used to wear these really flimsy, thin leather helmets.
Yeah.
So obviously,
way back.
You get the ground. You had absolutely zero ground protection, and then slowly but surely they adopted helmets with thicker padding within. But then now, I think it's been about 2 years. In practices, they're mandating an extra layer the players put on top of their helmets. When they practice, they're big foam caps. Yeah.
I want to ask, like, what is that? Like, is that like styrofoam? Like, what?
It's you know the padding inside the helmet.
It's like a D3O type of
thing.
It's
thicker, but on the outside, they've literally taken the padding that protects the head inside the helmet and put it on the outside.
Do you think one day they'll start playing with that?
Yes,
really,
1,000%. They reduce concussions. They said by like 15 or 20%.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah. And again, who knows? Maybe it's going to take an Antonio Brown brain scan for them to figure that out, eh?
Oh, my goodness. Chandler Jones, too. Again, you hate to see it, but some of the behaviors are... Oof.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking on NFL, we'll be back after these short messages.
Welcome, salutations and various forms of greetings, friends. My name is Mr. Billets. And when I'm not enjoying good ragtime music and tap dancing, I like to listen to Great Explosives on Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJLO 1690 AM. Now here's some kind of a cover of Frank Sinatra by a metal band. Take that, Hitler!
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
I walked down the hill about 12 o'clock. I sat right down on a great big rock. I looked down in the water and bless my soul, I seen a great big catfish jump in that hole. I'm a-going to fishing, cause everybody's fishing, and I'm a-going to fishing too. You bet your life that your loving wife might catch more fish than you. Any fish will bite if you got good bait.
And we're back. You're listening to the starting rotation on CJ Low 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Gindy alongside me, Jacob Snyder. There's a reason why we played this song, Jacob.
It is. Perfect timing. As most of you know, there was a big game on Monday night. The Detroit Lions beat the Raiders. It was a sloppy game, but at halftime, Jimmy Garoppolo with only three completions. Las Vegas really struggled to move the ball, and it was Detroit's, I'd say, C game, and they still were able to beat the Raiders by 12. So at 2 a.m. Following the game, the Raiders absolutely cleaned house, fired the head coach.
They went fishing.
They went fishing, exactly. Well, hey, Josh McDaniels will have plenty of money and time to go fishing now on quite a nice boat. Fired the...
You've seen it?
Oh, he's about to. It was a six-year deal.
Oh, wow.
Completely guaranteed. He lasted a year and a half. And there's nothing they can do. They've chosen to move on. There were huge expectations when he took over. It was a playoff team. He took over from an interim coach. And since they haven't won very much. It was a poorly coached team. There were some questionable roster decisions, and that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, this must lower Josh McDaniels' stock, though, as a coach, right?
I think this removes his stock as a coach outside of New England. Because St. Louis, terrible OC. When he was the head coach of Denver, hot start. I think they were 6-0, and then he proceeded to lose 15 of the next 20.
So do you have a prediction as to where he can go next?
Oh, yeah, directly to New England.
Okay.
He will be straight back to New England. This could not come at a better time for them as they're talking about. Now, I understand he was extended, but we don't know for how long. As they're starting to think about Bill Belichick's successor, you can throw another name in that hat.
It wouldn't be his child or his children.
I'm joking. It is. No, you're joking.
That nepotism, I have to just throw it in there sometimes.
Yeah. Listen, you're joking. I wouldn't be surprised. But yes, so we're talking about head coach fired, GM fired, offensive coordinator fired, and Jimmy Garoppolo bench.
Yeah, yeah. So your Lions.
It was sloppy. It was, listen, I'll always take a victory, but it was extremely sloppy. Jared Goff with a pick six. I mean, I understand they won by 12, but it shouldn't have been that close.
So what's the future for, like, the Oakland Raiders now? Or Las Vegas Raiders. Sorry, I'm going old school.
That's okay. Hey, I still call them the San Diego Chargers. We're okay. what's the future? I think you're playing the young kids. I think that's why you saw the move to bench Jimmy Garoppolo. Aiden O'Connell, rookie quarterback who played well in the preseason, will be taking the starts
but
going forward.
If you clean house on a whole staff and you make the whole staff go fishing,
yes,
this must impact players, and particularly your all-stars. So Devontae Adams, for example.
So it's an extremely unique situation. And it can also be, for these players, it's not always a bad thing. So you see, you're doing a big house cleaning, right? That also means during the off season you'll continue to clean house. Part of the reasons Adam wasn't traded was that, okay, maybe we're looking at firing the GM soon. We're not going to let him make such a big, important deal for the future of our franchise. But if you're Devontae Adams, you want to continue to play well to show teams, hey, I'm still a really good player. Come get me. Come get me out of this situation. And I feel like players have that mentality. I don't know if they were before based on the record, but you're no longer playing for the team. You're really focused on yourself at that point.
I just don't understand how it's very rare that an organization will cut an amount this like a high amount of management like this. And I just It mustn't be a very good dynamic right now, especially for like the players at least.
Right? Oh, no. I mean, but depending on who takes over, I know Antonio Pierce, he actually used to play. He won a Super Bowl as a linebacker for the New York Giants. I'm sure he's well-respected in the locker room, a former player taking over. And it's funny, 2 years ago, they were in the same situation and the team started to win. They actually made the playoffs when an interim coach took over. But again, it goes back to the owner. Just poor hires. You can't do that. It sets your team back so far.
No, of course. And you always see that generally, and this goes across the board in sports, that when an organization always has turnaround in terms of coaching, management, and staff, generally those are the more bottom tier teams.
That's an excellent point.
Because no team can, or no coaching management like side can really establish their the way they see things if they don't have the time to do it. And if you're only given finite time, then you can't go anywhere.
That's part of the trouble. When you take over a team as a coach that had just made the playoffs, the expectations are you're going to help them take the next step. And when you don't...
But hiccups do happen.
They do. No, they do. That, to your point, it's a very difficult situation. And I understand from the Raiders' side why they made the move. But that said, if you weren't sold on a guy to where you're firing him and you're in a half into a six-year deal, why was he your hire in the first
place? And why'd you sign such a lengthy contract?
Why did you offer him so much? Exactly.
There must have been trust, and then maybe something internal happened, which then prompted this exodus.
I wouldn't be surprised if more came out, especially with how many people they fired.
Yeah. Well, speaking of upsets, Kansas City Chiefs lost to the Broncos of all teams 24-9.
Absolute blowout. The Chiefs could not move the ball. Throughout the year, the offense has not looked as crisp, especially when they can't get the ball to Travis Kelce. The receiving core struggles to get open, struggles to catch the ball, and I think that was all highlighted against Denver.
Losing Tyreek Hill was a major, major setback.
Losing Tyreek Hill over $18 million. I looked back at that trade. That's so funny. My friend who's a Dolphins fan and I were just discussing that the other day because of Hill's massive year. I'll never understand it. You can't tell me there weren't other players that you would have been willing to lose over Hill. Now Mahomes is staring at one of the worst receiving groups in the league. Yes, he has Kelce, but after that, Denver's defense is not that good to be able to hold Kansas City to 9. But it just became a point where Mahomes was just holding the ball. Guys aren't getting open. And at that point, anyone can generate pressure.
Oh, no, no doubt, no doubt. But like... Why do you? Because again, like of course, players follow the money, right? But $18 million for a star wide receiver doesn't seem that expensive, really.
It's not
in the grander scheme of things. It doesn't seem that pricey.
Absolutely not. And it's roster construction. When you start looking at the Chiefs, they had Chris Jones on a big deal. You have Travis Kelce on a big deal. You have some of your linemen on a big deal. And then you have Patrick Mahomes making $50 million. That eats up a ton of cap.
It does. It does.
I understand the salary cap's gone up and stuff in recent years, but it always hurts your roster when a quarterback's making that high of a percentage of the cap. And you have to make business decisions, like with Tyreek Hill, over, you know, $18 million or $8 million to where you now have to let him go. And... there are consequences. You can't just walk out. And now we're talking. They're still 6-2. That defense has been playing well. But if you want to talk about winning a Super Bowl, which seems to be the expectation each year in Kansas City, I'm not sure how you're going to do it with this receiving group.
No, their offense seems a bit lacking. In the game, total yards were only around like 275-ish, which is, for Mahomes is kind of pedestrian.
Usually he has more yards passing than that.
Yeah.
That's total team yards. That's rushing.
That's total team yards.
Yes, that's rushing and passing.
That is wild. Yeah.
Against one of the lowest ranked defenses in the entire league.
Yeah, and the thing is, they got trounced by a team that's 3-5.
And not trying to win. The worst kept secret, they're not trying
to win. You don't think they're trying
to win? Absolutely not. They need a new quarterback there in Denver. Caleb Williams.
So what, you think Russell Wilson is just...
Oh, no. The guys out there are playing as hard as they can, but you saw they released Frank Clark and Randy Gregory.
Yeah.
Just released or traded for such a low-round pick that it didn't matter.
I guess Broncos country ain't riding.
No, sir. They hadn't.
That meme kills me.
It's so
funny. Do
you
see the video?
Oh, of course I've seen the video.
I want to play it. Hold on. But yeah, anyway, but it just seems as if like... The Kansas City Chiefs on the offensive side just don't seem like, I don't know, I watched a few brief sequences here and there over the season so far, and it just doesn't seem like the same exciting football that was once in Kansas City.
It's what made the team. It was crisp, high-scoring football, and it looks completely different. I saw them live in person, and it was the same thing. They only put up 20 points.
Oh, is there going to be an ad?
Let's ride. Let's ride.
He doesn't even sound sure of himself.
Let's ride. No.
Perfect.
Perfect. Oh, my. He'll never live
Broncos
this one
country,
down.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Terrible.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Oh, it seems. Oh, no, my God.
Broncos it's country. So cringy.
I got to turn this off. Yeah, it's... It's
for anyone at home who wants more cringy Russ content, look up his Subway ad.
His Subway ad. He has a Subway
it's
ad,
It's even
too.
Worse. The Danger Witch, they were quick to pull that out.
Danger Witch.
The Danger Witch. This is going
Why
back
Why they
here.
Dub it the Danger Witch?
I'll never know because they pulled it after a month when the team was 1-3.
He doesn't seem like a very dangerous dude, though.
Not anymore. Back in the Seattle days, he was
No,
incredible.
No. That I get. But like, his playing style was never really indicative of like danger. Right?
Well, I don't know. Escaping some of those pockets and stuff in Seattle. Did you
but
ever
why Danger Witch?
I don't know. Well, actually, I do know. He's Danger Russ. That was a nickname for a minute.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then it's the Danger Witch.
Yeah, well, it seems like...
It is blown up in their face. Not the best ad campaign.
I think the marketing guys at Subway need a little shake-up. But anyway. But yeah, so the Chiefs, you know, not the hottest right now.
No.
Especially losing.
And another team I wanted to bring up.
Please do.
San Francisco 49ers.
They're not doing well either.
They went from looking like an absolute juggernaut, like shoo-in.
But hold
for the
on,
Super
though.
Bowl.
What about Brock Purdy's like lingering injuries, though?
That needs to be looked at a little deeper. You've seen in so I don't know if you've seen these, but on some of the replays, he took some big hits to the head.
Yeah,
like there was he should have been checked for a potential concussion, and then the next game he plays, and we're seeing some uncharacteristically bad throws.
I want to ask you something though. So you mentioned hits to the head. We know that the NFL, in quotations, is taking concussions more seriously, but really, are they?
No.
Is it just more for like a PR media thing?
Oh, it has to
and
be.
And they're saying, oh, we're taking care of this. We'll put you in a little tent in a loud, I was about to swear, in a really loud arena. But consequently, like, what does that really do, though?
It had gotten so bad with the concussion discussion for the NFL that it was jeopardizing the game a little bit.
Like, is the tent soundproofed? That's what I want to know.
Probably sometimes not. They pop in the tent for 2 minutes. I swear they're just going in there to get an ankle wrap sometimes. They'll take a hit to the head. They'll pop in the tent for 2 minutes. What can a neurologist do? And I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Is
maybe
a neurologist
everything?
Even on payroll?
That's another weird thing.
Or is
thing.
It just the trainer who's used to like so, more muscular, you know?
They do some bicep curls in the tent to fix their head. So there's a doctor on staff, and then the NFL also has an independent neurologist. This independent neurologist has the ability to actually pull players off the field.
Okay.
But do they do it a lot? No.
No, because not. I'm assuming coaches or whatever, coaches favor.
Could you imagine, right, the discussion after? Oh, it was a big third down, and they pulled
our
QB.
Oh, you're saying this neurosurgeon has more coaching power than I do. I'm the head coach.
Exactly.
I just signed a 6-year contract and got fired.
And got fired a month and a half then. Good for him, though. It's a great
career. No, get the bag.
Path.
Get the bag. Exactly. If you're just going to sit home for 6 years and just get paid to do that, hey, I didn't fire myself. I signed on the dotted line.
One of my favorite sports writers today, he tweeted, it's the American dream to be a fired head coach.
Of course. I should have done that.
Yeah, I know. Where do I sign up?
But back to the 49ers. So, yeah, they're not looking too good.
No, they made a very interesting move at the deadline to bring in Chase Young. I think that could end up paying massive dividends for them. A defensive end to play opposite side, Nick Bosa. They actually were both at Ohio State at the same time, which is pretty cool. But for them, it's been the declining play of Purdy. He went from, and again, yes, maybe
and
he's
again,
hurt,
that could
maybe
be
he's
total,
not,
yeah.
Right? But again, you have such a good system. If he is truly not 100%, why not put in Sam Darnold? Darnold's capable. Yes, he's not great, but in that system, I feel like he could carry the team for a couple weeks.
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the 49ers play like a very apple pie and ice cream type of football where it's like
yes,
traditional, you know, passing with the forefront of passing, you know, to
absolutely.
Yeah. So if you can just put like, again, Sam Darnold in there, who from memory seems like he's, you know, able to. be consistent, right?
Right. It's very tough to look at his career. He's been surrounded by absolutely nothing. He was on a bad Jets team. He was on a bad Panthers team. It's tough to judge. Yeah. But I don't know. I've always felt he was capable enough, especially in this system. Like you said, it's the modern-day West Coast system. Passes are not going past 15 yards, and you have Christian McCaffrey to run the ball with most plays. The quarterback's not under pressure. You're not playing in like the Los Angeles Chargers offense or the Chiefs offense where the quarterback's asked to do a ton. He's dropping back 45 to 50 times a game. In San Francisco, you're throwing about 30 times a game and you're handing it to McCaffrey 20 to 25. That's it. That's your playbook.
So what were the main, if you can take away a few detriments from the Bengals game, what do you take away?
Little disappointed by the 49ers defense, especially the cornerback play. The Bengals, as of recently, as Joe Burrow's gotten healthier and healthier, they've been able to throw it a bit better.
They've been getting better, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But in this game, like you even saw some of those lower in the depth chart Bengals receivers that we had talked about not stepping up actually started to play well. Even they were getting open. And for me, giving up 31 points, that's not good for what's supposed to be an elite defense who had all their horses out there. The offense, okay, you can write Purdy's hurt, maybe not hurt. Trent Williams was out. That's the best left tackle in the game. Understandable. Debo's banged up. I'm not sure if he even played. But the defense giving up 31, not sure that's as excusable as the offense's poor performance.
No. I think you have to credit the defense with the loss, you know?
You do. In that situation where you know your offense is not going to be at full strength, it's on them to step up, especially with some of the talent on that roster. Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, Hargrave.
Yeah, because they are stacked if you think about it.
Yes, absolutely. So, up and down.
What can they do to improve like this slump? This three-game losing streak.
Well, so that's why you saw the trade for Chase Young. That's the thought.
Exactly, yeah.
So you take some pressure off Nick Bosa off the other side. Young's actually had a really good year. He's had one of the weirdest careers I've known in memory. I think he was top three pick. And plays well, shows a ton of flashes first year. Little slow second year, and then he pops his knee.
Mm.
Has not produced very well to the point I don't think they picked up his fifth-year option. Which for first-round picks, as a team, you always have that option to do that. It comes in around like $10 to $15 million for a high pick at his position, but the Commanders had chosen not to pick that up based on his play. But then this year, he starts to show a bit of promise again. He's got he's on pace for 10-plus sack season. And now, pair him on the other side of Nick Bosa, who generates so much attention in blocking, Chase Young will be able to rush with the best matchup on the offensive line every time. And never see a double team. I think you could see that really turn the defense around. And when your defense is playing lights out, that just gives the offense more confidence.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, for sure gives them the motivation to, like, further on, right?
Right, you can take more risks. You're less worried. Oh, you know, okay, it's fourth and one, and we're at midfield. Do we really need points that bad? Actually, we don't. The defense can't get a stop. So we're going to kick this way. Oh, wait, we're not going to worry about going for a fourth down in a questionable spot here. They'll turn it around. I don't think this is a long-term slump to where we're talking about them. You know, they're still going to win that division, I feel. I know Seattle's been good, but I still feel like San Francisco.
I love the Geno Smith story.
I do, too. Again, he destroys my Lions every year, so I'm a little bitter still. But it just speaks to, you know, before the show, we were just talking about these quarterbacks with Garoppolo being benched. How long of a leeway did they get? You saw Smith in New York. He looked nowhere like this guy. But you put these guys in a better situation, and he's throwing the ball all over the field.
I think confidence has a big thing to do with it too, right? Because
right.
In Seattle, he was behind Westbrook the whole time.
He was benched.
He was benched.
Back.
He was more of a secondary QB than a primary man, right?
Absolutely. Like they brought him into Seattle as the backup behind Wilson to start it. But then once Wilson messed up index finger on his throwing hand and was out for a couple weeks. Smith came in and played well, and then he had the familiarity with the system to where they felt comfortable going forward. But when you bring in a guy like Geno and you surround him with Jackson Smith and Nick Jigba, very tough name to say.
Nick
Jigba.
Jigba.
I think it's Nick, I might be butchering that to no end. So for all those Ohio State fans
sorry
out there,
for
I'm
the,
sorry.
Yeah, the phonetic translation on that one.
And Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Kenneth Walker in the backfield. Yeah. Like, you're in a perfect situation as a quarterback.
So we're talking about the low, right, with the Chiefs, with, you know, the 49ers. What about the highs, though? So because the Eagles right now are 7-1. They're flying.
It's terrifying.
What do you do if you're facing up against the Eagles? How do you beat them?
That's the issue. I don't know yet.
Because they're destroying teams. Their last win was by a touchdown against the Commanders. And by the way, the Commanders are doing kind of well this year.
Just out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
But they're extremely inconsistent. Like they dropped a game to the Bears. Yeah. They couldn't score against that Chicago defense, which has been terrible all year. But somehow against the Eagles, they're racking up 31. But no, back to the Eagles. The scary part about them is they can have a C to C-plus level game and still win by 7-plus. They did not play that well, especially on defense over the weekend.
But they have a great O-line, though.
Elite O-line. And, best in the league, probably.
And I think, I don't know, of course it must be pretty much like average NFL fandom must know that like an O-line is like needed.
Oh, absolutely. It can make or break your game. But why do
teams not focus on... Some teams don't even focus on O-line.
I'll never understand it. And not only focusing on the starters, you got to focus on depth. Those guys do get hurt. There will always be, I'd say, 3 to 4 games you don't have your full complement of linemen, even for a team that managed to avoid the injury bug. You need to not only focus on starters and pay those guys, you need to make sure you have depth. Those later rounds of the draft, you should always be grabbing a guard or a tackle.
Why don't teams, do you think, focus around the O-line?
Because it gets expensive. So left tackles in the NFL, it's one of the highest paid positions in the entire league outside of quarterbacks, if not the highest outside of quarterbacks. Mm. You'll see those guys make $25 million a year guaranteed.
Oh, my.
To really? Block. Exactly. Wow, so okay. You think about it, like, and it's a position that does get hurt. So I'm paying $25 million to a position that could potentially get injured. Can we cut costs? You know, can we maybe get a running back who's really good at blocking or a tight end who's really good at blocking so we can get a lower tier left tackle and just have those guys chip and still protect our quarterback? That is the thought process.
What are the odds that a lineman like doesn't become a bust, but let's say it doesn't fulfill his contract?
That's the good thing likely? About linemen. Very, very high floor to linemen. Now, the ceiling, not all of them become elite. If you draft a lineman in the first round, it's tough. It's a tough position to play in the league. Obviously, you see how crazy athletic some of these defensive linemen are. They're 350 pounds, yet they can jump.
They're twinkle toes.
Right. They can jump 30 feet in the air and run a 4.6 40. But the floor, extremely, extremely high. If you take a lineman in the first round, he'll at least be able to play for you.
Yeah.
He'll be a starter. He'll be consistent. Will he be great? No guarantee there. But it's always considered every year one of the safest picks in the draft.
Makes sense.
Right. It's I don't want to say
because your role is just to block.
It's a simple role. It's very difficult given who you have to block.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's part of the reason why you think about receivers.
Open up gaps here and there, you know, get the offense running through. But
exactly.
When it comes to a passing player, you're just blocking your QB.
It's one-on-one. Yeah. Simple as it gets.
Mano y mano. Did you want to talk about the World Series? World Series? Is that how they say it?
Oh,
World
man.
Championship World Series? I heard it's not very entertaining, hence why I forgot the name of it.
We've been avoiding baseball. It was funny. We were talking about before the show.
We got a few minutes before ad time.
So exactly.
I can just let you vent on, and you can explain how boring it's been.
I know. This is called the filler segment. So Texas actually has players injured. Like one of their best postseason hitters is not even playing. They won 10-0. This is a situation in sports that I'll always just be kind of shocked and a bit baffled by. You'll see a team come from the wild card like Arizona did. They did not have a very good record this year, but they get into the postseason and they just start playing lights out baseball. Like, and again, I'm not doing this to take away something from Texas. Great bats, great hitting. Even with Scherzer out, the pitching, excellent as well. But Arizona, throughout the playoffs, absolutely lights out. Clutch hitting, clutch pitching. And then we get to the World Series, and we're not seeing it anymore.
But this isn't, like, I remember, please correct me, but I remember there, in recent memory, being a team that kind of had the same come up to Arizona, where they were kind of like a wild card, somehow switched the dime in postseason, and then totally... poop the bed come World Series time. Am I missing something? Was there a team recent recently who did that?
There definitely was. And my baseball, you're 100% on that. But my baseball history beyond the current season, garbage every year. There's so many games, man. They're just
it's a lot of memory.
But no, I don't remember. I don't know if you remember, but a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about how all these favorites were getting knocked out.
Yeah.
And this Diamondbacks team was one of the teams knocking out the favorites. It's just, it must be tough for the team, for the fans to be on this magical run and then make that final game for that final series and just not be able to stay competitive.
Was it the Phillies?
Oh my goodness.
Last year, 2022?
Yes, sir.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
Think about the Phillies. Now,
they lost, again, though, right?
Absolute shocker they weren't in the World Series. They were the team with the hottest bats in the postseason. They hit everything. They even took a 3-2 series lead and then lost it.
Yeah. I'm just trying to read here. Yeah, I think the Phillies lost last year in the World Series, right?
Yes, it was. All the Philly teams, that was the funny thing. All the Philly teams were losing in the final because the Eagles lost the Super Bowl and the Phillies lost the World Series.
The Flyers were nowhere to be seen.
Are they? I was going to ask you, how are the Flyers this year?
So far, mid, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they still have a lot of, like, they're still in a rebuild. Carter Hart, who's their main goalie, we're really switched the topic.
You're welcome to Philly Sports Talk.
Pretty much, yeah. So this is Philly
Sports Talk. Philly Sports Talk Montreal.
We'll have a little jingle for the next episode. But defense is okay, I guess. Offense, they don't really have any superstars coming into the lineup, but their goaltending, which was supposed to be like their main bread and butter, in Carter Hart, who's a young goalie who had a stellar performance in his rookie year, now going into his third year, hasn't really been doing that great. And of course, like it's encompassing and it reflects the rest of the team. And if you don't have like a great defensive core, then you can't really, if you're getting more shots than your average goalie, of course, eventually if you're going to trickle in, then it hits your confidence and your confidence goes low. So it's continuous, right? Just like it's a domino effect. But hopefully the Flyers, you know, hopefully, what am I saying hopefully? I don't really like the Flyers, but you know, pretty much.
No, I was just asking because for Philly fans, this, again, must be another heartbreak.
Yeah, but not for the Eagles for sure, right?
But
7-1.
But are we going to, does it look like anyone can beat them now? No. But again, last year, did it look like anyone can beat them? No. But then you get to the Super Bowl and sometimes things happen. Yeah, that's the fun thing about the NFL, though. We're like these massive upsets that you'd have never saw cut.
But that's the beauty of like a single knockout.
Yes, right? Same with me. Yep.
Like single knockouts are just so cool. And the way, even like the NBA doing it with the play-in the play-in game.
I absolutely love the play-in. I'm a fan of it.
People, like, you know, the purists say, oh, it's not good for the pro season bracket. I like it. Because it gives, like, the ninth seed team a shot at, you know, beating the wild card to get in. And, like, that's so sick. Like, I find that really cool.
Not only that, it gives some teams playoff experience. Like, you think about the Thunder, who are expected to do a lot more this year. They got experience in the play-in. Shake and say, you know what? I've been in the playoffs.
Yeah, and teams especially that are great in the regular season, face off against, like, a wild card team, have everything to lose. And those eighth seed teams have nothing to gain.
Exactly.
So the dynamic going into it is wild. It's crazy.
Now you got me excited for NFL playoffs.
Yeah. Well, on that note, you know what? We'll go on break and we'll be back after these short little messages. A bit of NBA talk. How does that sound?
Let's go.
See you soon.
If you like served with a side of a little bit of and a heaping helping of then you're gonna love BVST, your best and worst of rock and roll, country, punk, and metal, every Wednesday from 7 to 9, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Au cinéma public, nous proposons une programmation en salle composée de films d'ici et de nouveautés internationales, de classiques et des pépites méconnues, ainsi que de courts-métrages et des séances familiales. Nos billets sont parmi les moins chers à Montréal, $10 au tarif régulier et 8 $ pour les étudiants, les enfants et les aînés. Nous offrons également des 56 billets pour encore plus d'économies. Venez nous voir à la Casa d'Italia, juste en face de la station Jean Talon. Et rendez-vous au cinémapublic.ca pour découvrir notre programmation. Le cinéma public pour un cinéma vivant.
Better screen. Now the play is disrupted. Pops upset. Nassell's going to have to go on his own. Three-pointer. No good. Wimbanyama! It's a one-point game. 6.8 to go.
You might want to call a timeout to advance it.
Oh, Johnson takes it from him. Johnson hangs. Yes! And the Spurs have the lead.
That was the finish yesterday between the Phoenix Suns and the San Antonio Spurs. Did you get a chance to watch it, Jacob?
Yes, sir. Absolutely incredible.
Nail-biting to the finish game, 115-114 with a second to spare. But we did see a young phenom who looked great.
He looks every bit the part.
Victor Wembanyama.
Yes, sir. We had talked about him before the season. Like, what do you think they'll be? Do you think they'll live up to the hype? What he did last night, taking over that game, not only clutch baskets, but clutch rebounds. Those shots careening off the rim late in the game, in what you said, like you said, a very
when
tight game.
When you're 7'5", I hope you're rebounding.
Oh, I know. But right. You know how the NBA's play now. You have these, Kristaps Porzingis is basically a shooter on the perimeter at this point.
Yeah, but you can credit injury to... You know, and it's unfortunate because generally these like Kristaps Porzingis, like a Bull Bull,
yep,
like a Taco Fall when he was formerly in the NHL, in the NBA. thing is, they have such a large frame that injuries are so common,
especially on landing.
But the difference is, yep, with Victor, though, it seems like he's proportioned well.
He is. And the other thing I noticed about his game, he doesn't play too far above the rim. Like, he doesn't need to jump high. He's already there.
He's already
7'5". Exactly. So he's not jumping 30 inches in the
air.
He's
not jumping out of the gym here. No. He just extends his arms and does a little hop and holds the rim. But yesterday, so far, honestly, all things considered, some people going into the season had a bit of like, we're a bit iffy on Victor, you know, like because, you know, of his size for one.
Oh, I definitely was. At 7'5", that's an odd size to be at.
No, exactly. Like, not adapting to North American basketball, you know, playing in Europe his whole career up until that point. But like many other European players, they find it easier to score here than they do overseas.
That's what Luka said. I was shocked by that. Especially over there, there's a lot more passing and they get each other involved. You think, and there's also everyone can shoot. So the floor is very spaced in European ball. I was kind of surprised when players said that, actually.
Yeah, no, it does make kind of, the game is, it feels more traditional.
Yes.
In Europe compared to here, where it's now spread out, more perimeter shooting. And even with that being said, like the traditional positions that were formerly once in the NBA are now like literally spread out. Like your center isn't a five anymore. You could be like a swing three.
Exactly.
To a point where it's kind of like crazy in a way, right?
Your center will be 6'7". I didn't think I'd ever see anything like it in my lifetime. It's this, but it all goes back to trying to space the floor more, and that's what I don't know. I never understood that comment. Easier to score in the NBA, especially with how much ISO ball. Maybe that's what it is though. The ISO ball giving them more touches because it's still there in the NBA. We see it, you know, with Luka a lot late in game. The Spurs turning to Devin Vassell on a one-on-one.
Yeah. The only thing I can see Victor maybe like improving would be turnover rate, but that's just going to come with experience, right? It's going to come with experience. He had 18 points yesterday, shot 50% from field goal, 2-for-6 from 3-point for a 7-for-5 guy. That's pretty
not
impressive.
Bad. You just need to be a threat out there.
Yeah,
Around 30% like that, you're fine.
Oh, no, for real. But I it kind of sucks that he went to the Spurs because I'm not really the biggest Spurs fan. I never liked the Spurs. I think it's just because the Tim Duncan era Spurs. I just was never a fan. I didn't like, okay, yeah, they won chips. I get it. But, like, they weren't the most exciting. There was really rudimentary basketball, X's and O's,
that's
Popovich.
That's so funny.
You know, you have Ginobili, you have Parker, you have Tim Duncan just standing there. Like, they're doing their thing. I get it. But I was never really a fan.
They were so boring. Spurs,
they were very boring to watch. But it was effective.
They won every game, so you couldn't say a thing.
Exactly.
But, oh, exactly. They didn't have a single player who was going above the rim. This was all movement, plays. Tony Parker would get across half court and call a play.
Yeah.
Now in the NBA, your point guard across half court, you'll see a pick and roll at most, and then he's attacking.
So let's move on to our, well, not the NBA's biggest crybaby, but.
He's getting close.
I don't know.
He's doing his best.
I don't like the way this is going with James Harden now to another team, the Los Angeles Clippers, in exchange for a multitude of different players as well as draft picks. I won't get into the whole details of it, but it was a pretty big trade for his blockbuster of the year. So we're kind of seeing a reoccurring like thing here with Harden, right? First goes to the Nets. Actually, no, fallout with the Rockets.
Yes.
Goes to the Nets.
Yes.
Low-key falls out with the Nets because
Irving isn't falls playing. Out with the Nets. Yes, 100%.
Goes, then gets dealt to Philly for Ben Simmons.
Yes.
Talks crap
about the GM.
VP of or the president of basketball operations.
The
Sarah
very,
Morey,
yeah, yep. the very
China,
guy who brought him there.
Who brought him there. They start going back and forth to the point where Daryl Morey wasn't allowing James Harden on the team plane to go to their away game recently.
Yes, sir.
And then now, coming out of the woodwork, we find out that James Harden is now going to join Paul George, Kawhi Leonard in Los Angeles.
See, there's a name you left out there. Russell Westbrook. One of the guys he tried getting traded away from.
That's true. That's true. So what's going on in the head of James Harden? Like
I would love to know. Listen.
I'm very curious as to know why, like, it seems like there's no like, I don't want to say loyalty.
There's no direction.
But it seems like there's no direction. There's always a fallout where you can't, like, you know, earlier when we said a management or an organization that always consistently switches management will never win anything.
Right.
It's the same thing with a player.
Yes. So, oh, you're 100% correct.
So with him continuously going from team to team and team and team, it's like you can never establish your system anywhere and you don't even know what your role is.
Like, isn't my question to him would be, aren't you tired of this? Aren't you tired of moving? Like you just said, having to play with all these new players again, new system of basketball. Your roles, responsibilities will be different on the Clippers.
Yeah, and also your reputation is kind of getting hit in a way.
Oh, it's almost down to zero, I feel like, with him. And like you said, it's been so many times. Fans don't like this. I think people are tired of this. It feels like it's every offseason now. Oh, Harden doesn't want to play for the team. He opted in. He opted into his contract with the Sixers and then said, I'm not showing up. Like, no, that's just ridiculous.
It's not a good look for Harden, and it's not a good look for for the fan base. Well, not actually for the fan base. It's not a good look that Harden is portraying to the fan base of Philly.
Or the Clippers. What happens when he's not happy with his role before midseason with the Clippers?
But like, realistically, what is his role on the Clippers? Because I'm still trying to figure that out.
That's the weird thing. So Russell Westbrook has actually been playing tremendously well
he's
with them.
Well, yeah, he has.
So you're going to throw him on the bench because Harden and Westbrook can't play together. Westbrook can't play off ball, and they play a traditional center in Zubac who cannot shoot.
That's the thing.
So who's going to the bench? It's not going to be Harden. He'll just ask out again.
They're not
going to
put any of them on the bench. They're all going to start.
Oh my God. Then it's going to be terrible. You'll have no spacing.
It's going to be, and we've seen this in the past. If history tells us anything, it's when you have like multiple ball dominant players, especially all-stars playing together. Can't get much done. Look at what they tried to do in Brooklyn with Kevin Durant,
no,
Kyrie Irving, James Harden. It didn't work.
No, you got, and then also the lack of defense. Like, I understand that Paul George was really known for a long time in the league with his defense. He slipped. Kawhi doesn't play. Injury. Kawhi.
Injuries. Exactly.
Zubac is just, again, a traditional center. He's too slow to guard on the perimeter. Westbrook hasn't been, he tries his best, but he gambles too much on steals and always leaves his man open.
And he's very hot and cold when it comes to shooting.
Yes, sir. And Harden doesn't play defense. Who is going to guard? I understand this is an offensive league. Who is going to guard anybody?
To be honest, I don't understand. If I'm the Clippers, I would have steered totally clear from this trade.
Oh, get him out of the locker room.
I would have not
even
entertained this for a second, to be honest.
Again,
you're losing good players. You're losing depth players for a guy who don't even know if he's going to be there next year. He could if you want. I don't know what his contract stipulates, but
he's done. He's done. He's a complete free agent
If it's this easy for him to just leave like Philly, who's to say that he's not going to do the same thing in Los Angeles?
By the trade deadline this year, why are we assuming he's going to stay on the team the whole year? Just because he was traded there, that doesn't mean anything.
Watch,
to him.
They're going to go on a 3-game losing streak. He's going to lose the plot and he's going to dip.
Oh, anyway. And to your point, though, I really like this trade for Philly, though. add some good depth around a player in Maxey who's just been playing better and better.
Philly, yeah, exactly.
They finally have some good wings. Covington, Marcus Morris, very capable players who they're adding to a roster that really needed. That roster lacked depth.
No, for sure. And now they got depth.
And it's Maxey's team with Embiid, like as it should have been.
But is that, when you look at the contenders in the East, especially Milwaukee, that's the name that continues popping in my head.
Yeah, you're going, well, I'm saying Boston, but.
Either or Boston.
Sure.
Those two teams are going to probably be in the Eastern Conference Final. I don't think the 76ers can get out of the East with the teams that are currently there.
Oh, absolutely not, but I don't think they were doing that anyway.
No, of course not, but at least like now the dynamic in the locker room is going to be better.
Exactly. They will play better without him.
Yeah, they're going to play better without him. They know for certain that he's not going to be there anymore, no uncertainty.
Yeah, when's James coming? When's he showing up? Is he showing up? Yeah, you're not dealing with that. Excellent point there.
No, exactly. So at least that's good. But I'm blanking. I was going to say something else about this, but I kind of lost
my... But for the Clippers, you know, you said, why not just steer clear, which I completely agreed with. It really feels like they're grasping at straws.
It seems like, okay, now I think... Again, you know how LA is.
Yes.
And this is the point I wanted to say before I forgot it earlier. Like, you know LA, it's all about the names.
Yes.
Especially when you're playing second fiddle to arguably one of the better franchises in NBA history, Los Angeles Lakers. Maybe this was more of a PR thing.
Oh, 100%. They're opening a new arena, I think, what, next year?
I'm rubbing my hands like I'm Birdman. Maybe this is like, you know, maybe they just want to get like that media attention out there. Because let's say something does happen. Any press is good press.
Oh, right? For LA teams,
I could be wrong.
Exactly.
I could be wrong. But, you know, the Clippers always play a second fiddle. And when they move to Inglewood, I guess it'll be different. But they always play a second fiddle to the Lakers.
100%.
They play in the same arena. People say that it's the little cousin.
Yep.
Little tap on the head. Have fun. Go play out there with your friends.
Little brother.
Yeah, you know, little brother. It's kind of like, okay, so if we bring in James Harden, you know, it's gonna give a bit more name notoriety.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense basketball-wise, and that's why we're starting to talk about other reasons they could have brought it in.
I'm trying to think
with
of other
their current
why.
Team. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it's not gelled. It's not gelled at all.
Unless we hear within the next couple of days Westbrook is traded or released, and then we can have a discussion about the basketball fit and actually, you know, getting some done with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's been playing so well with them that probably wouldn't go over well if they do move him.
No, for sure. But I just don't know. Again, like, James Harden just doesn't seem like the move right now, especially. Well, maybe if injuries happen among the amid the year, maybe it might be a bit better. Like, I can imagine Paul George maybe being out for a bit, Kawhi Leonard being out
Kawhi
for a bit.
Takes games off.
James Harden coming in, taking a bit of that load off. It could work, but in the end, in all, I don't think it's going to work. Embiid got fined.
Terrible.
I loved it, but when I saw it initially, I was like, yeah, you're going to get fined for this.
Oh, we knew right
away.
So,
why is there, like, we have limited time here, but, like, why are they taking fun out of basketball?
I don't know.
It's just a celebration. Who cares? Is it because it's more, like, in the groin region? Okay, so for people who don't know, like, I believe he got the turnover.
Yep.
He dunked.
Yep.
And then as a celebration, he did like the the D-Generation X
wrestle
move or whatever, the wrestle celebration.
But that's
right?
The thing, he was following a wrestler. It's not like he was just, you know, around his groin area to be around his groin area.
He was doing the celebration. It's a celebration with the X and you go towards the legs or the thighs. I personally enjoyed it. I thought it was like it added a bit more liveliness to the game.
You want to see him show some emotion?
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Like, why are we fining players for that?
I don't agree with it. I didn't like the fine. I thought the celebration was justified.
Anyway. Yeah. Speaking of fun, did you do any NBA fantasy leagues you joined or not?
Not yet. I'm too knee deep in these NFL fantasy.
It's pretty much out, eh?
Oh, is it? Yeah, am I missing the boat on it?
We're like the third weekend.
Terrible. Okay, maybe I'm too far behind on that. I'm so locked in NFL fantasy, man.
I can get that for sure. With the time we have, though, I'm going to go over a few of the players I got on my team.
Oh, let's hear it.
Hold on, give me a minute. But yeah.
Pulling up our fantasy teams live on air.
CJ McCollum.
Great pick. Okay.
Jaylen Brown.
Okay, good scorer, doesn't get a lot of...
Mr. Boston, excuse me.
Hey, I didn't want to pay him. I wanted him sent to Portland.
You would have kept Marcus Smart?
No.
Neither?
Also gotten rid of Smart.
Oh, yeah, that's like the
I didn't think he was good in the locker room.
I got Kawhi. A bit of an iffy pick here, Paolo Banchero.
Actually, no, I really like him.
He's
I'm
not
a
the
huge
best,
fan.
Right now he's kind of falling. He finished with
He'll
15
get hot.
Yesterday.
He'll get hot.
Pascal Siakam.
Good pick.
One of the Twin Towers, Chet Holmgren.
Should be better later in the year.
Here's my dark horse pick. Jalen Duren from Detroit.
I don't know what happened with him over the offseason.
He
looks
amazing.
He
looks
amazing.
He looks great.
Like, he's putting up 20-year-old LeBron-type stats.
He passed like, LeBron for most double-doubles in most double-doubles as a teenager.
As a teenager. Yeah that's what I'm saying. Like, amazing.
Chris Paul. John Collins.
It could be good if he gets traded.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Baller.
DeMar DeRozan.
Yep, scores a lot.
Domantas Sabonis.
Sabonis. I always expect
I just want the rebound.